Welcome back to Pax Europiana, the debate about peace in Europe, and about this section we will discuss about the 10 key regions or states. I've already discussed about the USA. Today I will discuss then about Russia, and the vision is to have a free federal Russia, which is then also member of the United States Security Council and United Nations Security Council, and which is also hopefully a very good partner and also part of the free world. At the moment, as it is today in the year 2021 in January, I call that the current Russian Federation under the leadership of President Putin should somehow be sanctioned additionally for the terrible transgression it's doing since 2008 in Georgia, since 2013 in Syria, since 2014 in Ukraine, and in 2016 the intervention politically in America and in the United Kingdom, and also how it's treating its own journalists, its opposition leader, the murder of Nemtsov, and also now the poisoning of Navalny, but several other very terrible murders of opposition activists and of journalists. And it's a certain tragedy how this all has developed, the relation with Russia, and for the Russians, first of all, it's a tragedy, but also for the victims in the battlefields of Ukraine and Syria. So what we should do now in 2020, it's very simple, is to freeze the voting rights of the Russian Federation in the United Nations, in the OSCE, in the Council of Europe, and also to disinvite Russia from the G20. So the most logical is the G20, because there's a certain clarity and logic. We have basically disinvited Russia from the G8, it's now the G7, and then suddenly came this new format G20, which now takes more and more precedent, because there's also a certain logic to sit with India, for example, Indonesia, and it makes all, and Brazil, it's all very good. But also then Russia popped up back again, and it was not the idea to somehow punish Russia for invading Ukraine by then sitting again with Russia in the G20. Because if we don't want to see them or want to tell them that their behavior is unacceptable, then definitely it's just logical not to invite them to the G20. And if then it's not possible to change the G20 format towards a more reasonable format of G11, G12, where basically just the members of the OECD, the key members, sit. And I have outlined already that concept, but certainly not with Russia. We also have already from 2014 to 2019 frozen the voting rights in the Council of Europe. But then in 2019, the appeasement faction of the German left and the Macron liberals, they have got this decision done to have Russia back and reinstated fully in the Council of Europe, always with the argument of their membership fees, but also of the human rights protection of the Russian citizens. That's all valid and fine. But now, after this escalation of trying to poison the main opposition leader, I think it's quite logically to freeze that voting right again. It's also like this that we have, and I recommend now the latest video. It's called Pallas.Navalny. Please watch that. It's just online today. It's just watch it, actually. It's a wonderful documentary about the rise of Putin to power. You cannot do that better. It's in English subtitles, and it's a wonderful thing to do. So anyhow, what we need to do is also to reduce the energy imports into the European Union from Russia and cancel Nord Stream 2. Mr. Laschet, please, Mr. President Joe Biden, that's really an absolutely overriding priority. Cancel Nord Stream 2. And then the OECD, obviously. It's much better to have China in the OECD and then allowing Russia to treat the whole ideas of human rights with such a disrespect while being fully in the OECD. even having Russian observers in Ukraine in the OSCE mission, but by then behaving so badly and treating all the human rights, democracy, and all the ideas which the OSCE is about with such disrespect. Yeah? And in the UN, it might sound the most wildest idea to freeze the voting rights, but, you know, these whole principles of non-annexation and territorial sovereignty and not waging wars against neighbor, this is all what the UN is about. And how can a rule giver and be a rule enforcer be this role, which basically the UN Security Council is in a way, and the rule giver of the world, the security provider, the ultimate responder, and then you are the rule breaker. So this kind of discrepancy we can only solve by freezing the voting rights of the Russian Federation in the UN. This, I think, is the immediate steps. And I have already outlined in many episodes what needs to be done to win this second Cold War. I think it will take a decade to win it economically. Maybe the new protest movement of Navalny will have a major effect, but the power structures around Putin are well-funded, they are brutal, and they are ready to use money and brutality. And so I think it will be a 10 to 15 years confrontation, which we will have to win institutionally. And that's one of the main purposes of the whole podcast, is to show the way how to do that. So, but we need also a plan for the future of Russia. That's basically what I want to do here, because Russia should be in the United Nations Security Council. It should be also in the Council of Europe, in G20, whatever that format will be then, by then. And in the OSCE, Russia should be a free federal Russia, and that should be the vision. And I would like to call for the European and Western decision makers to build a plan for the future of Russia, how it could look like, and how that country should develop as a kind of federation similar to the European Union or the United States in the period, whatever, in the 2040s, 2050s. But we need now to develop a plan, now to understand how Russia should work as a federation of free states united by central government. I think it will be more the transformation, maybe less like the EU, more like the United States. But definitely we have to understand Russia better, how it looks. And Russia is a bit confusing. It looks very big with this vector map, and it's also a big country, no doubt. It's from the population with 145. And, you know, if you take the 2 million from the Crimea away, which legally they are not in the, it's basically less. And maybe it's already much less because of the migration, because a lot of people really want to leave, because conditions are difficult and to live in Russia. And so what we really should think, and what is a little bit my argument, we have here over 90 federal subjects, and they are the classical case where different regions and internal states are confused, and so it's very confusing. And when you look at the map of the political entities of the Russian Federation, you find a lot of names you really don't know, and you think that's very strange and very complicated to remind. But this artificial complication, and because of the many political crises from the October Revolution to the whole Stalin process of industrialization, changing people around and creating a gigantic mess. Yeah? It is basically very confusing, but I want to help now to understand the Russian Federation better and how basically 28 important sixth level, you remember my small category when I have discussed the various levels of governance, I want to design basically 28 or explain Russia in 28 regions of Russia. You can call them 28 states, like in the United States of America. This United States of Russia, if you want to use that term, it's basically 28. And it's much easier to combine it a bit and to understand it in reference to the European Union states. And that's what I prepared. And I will now explain a little bit how you to imagine the various regions and how to understand basically Russia better. First of all, in the north, there is Karelia and Komi. And that's basically like Scandinavia, like Sweden and Finland. Yeah, it's basically also neighboring to Finland. Next then is east is Karelia. And there's also some minorities which are quite similar to the Finnish. And then you have Komi. Obviously, it's a bit of a simplification. That way I will work now. But I will explain it with Karelia and Komi, a kind of Sweden, a kind of Finland, up there in the north. And then you have the two big central parts of old Russia. This is Petersburg, if you want Western Russia. And then it's Moscow or Central Russia, Old Russia, you can use that name. And then you have about, again, in Old Russia, you have about 20 oblasts. That's their subdivisions, regions, which Kursk, Saratov, a lot of them. Yeah? But in that category, I would like to explain two northern regions, Komi Karelia, Petersburg in the west, and Old Russia in the east. And now we are at four. Then obviously in the Baltic states, quite similar to one of the Baltic states, Kaliningrad or the former Königsberg, the booty of the Soviet Union from the Second World War. And it's basically the fifth. Five. Remember Petersburg, Greater Petersburg, if you want, Petersburg region, then Old Russia around Moscow with all the oblasts, where most of the Russians basically live. Then you have Kaliningrad, Königsberg, that's three, Karelia, Komi. So we are at five. Then in the south, again, four regions, all with global significance. You will remember, of course, Volga region, and that's where Stalingrad or Volgograd or Tsaritsa, this dominant city at the Volga. And south, west of it, it's Kuban. It's easy to remember. Kuban is basically the Black Sea coast and some adjacent regions. And it's, of course, a lot of strategic famous places like Sochi, like Putin's palace. And it's the classical Don Cossack region in that sense. And that's basically the two western parts of the southern Russia. And then at the Caspian Sea, it's Astrakhan and Kalmykia. Kalmykia famous for the Buddhist minority and the chess president of the Global Chess Federation. And Kalmykia, that is, and Astrakhan on the northern part of the Caspian Sea. And Astrakhan always famous with Harry Potter, that's Astrakhan, you would call it. And so these four regions. So we have five in the north and four in the south. So we are basically at nine. And then in the west, along the Volga, there is what I call the Volga Benelux. And that's a lot of minority regions, and some of them very prosperous. They living in this central Volga territory. I call it the Volga Benelux. And I have basically five regions to remember, which is important. Chuvashia, and that's the former, that's basically where the Bulgarians are coming from. They are quite related, the original Bulgarians. Bulgarians also from Volgaria, from the Volga. That's basically the idea. Chuvashia is basically the origin of the Bulgarians. Tatarstan, obviously, where the center of the Golden Horde and of the Tatars. And Bashkortostan, Mariel, and Orenburg. So five in the Benelux region. This is basically the area I would compare with what we have in the European Union, Luxembourg. Mariel could be like Luxembourg. And then Netherlands, it's quite like Tatarstan and Belgium, maybe Orenburg. You can make the differences here. And this is basically these five regions. Yeah? So the Benelux regions in between on the eastern side. I make the comparison with Kaliningrad, with one of Lithuania, Estonia. This Kaliningrad is directly next to Danzig and Lithuania, so it's easy to compare with one of them. And Petersburg and Old Russia, obviously, very easy to compare with France and with Germany, because basically that's the equivalent I would put. And also when you look at Astrakhan, Kalmykia, maybe to compare them with Romania, Bulgaria, that makes a lot of sense at the Caspian Sea, and this Volga region and the Kuban, maybe with Italy and England, we would have a good example with that one. So basically, it is confusing, and I don't say it's easy, but I repeat, two northern states, Karelia, Komi, Königsberg, Kaliningrad, I use the German term from time to time, but then it's France and Germany, it's Petersburg, Russia, Volga, Kuban, Astrakhan, Kalmykia. And the Benelux, that's a bit more challenging, Tuvashia, like Bulgaria, Tatarstan, the Tatars, Bashkortostan, it's also quite a lot of Tatars, Mariel and Orenburg. Orenburg is on the border to Kazakhstan. So we have now covered already, when you look at it, 9, 14, and then we have 6 complicated ones. And here a lot of messing around in the northern Caucasus has happened. And it's basically, a lot of, when you look at it, it's almost always with double names and complicated, because artificial Stalin and others, they have changed the borders, the ethnicity, they made it very complicated. But who is ultimately living there? It's Ossetia, the Ossetians. It's the Ingushetians, the Chechenians, Dagestan, and it's the Cherkessians and the Alanians. The Alanians are more Turkish people, Ossetian more Iranian people. Cherkess is this tragic history of the Cherkessians, because the Russians have made a huge genocide while conquering this region and killing so many Cherkessians. So basically, that's the 6 regions of the northern Caucasus. And so Ossetia, North Ossetia, famous is more South Ossetia, the region of Georgia on the southern side of the Caucasus, which the Russians have occupied. Ingushetia, Chechenia is the most famous one, Dagestan, Cherkessia, and Alania. So that's 6. So we have maybe 20 regions now in European Russia, and on the other side it's basically Ural, Siberia, Kamchatka, and I call the Pacific coast like the Pacific coast, Pacifica, you can call it like this, because it makes no sense to separate. It's very non-densely, sparsely populated regions. And so basically these 4 regions covering the whole northern part of Asian Russia. It's Ural, logical, Siberia in the center, Kamchatka, the north, east, and Pacifica, the north, the southern part of the Pacific coast. Yeah? And then you have 4 smaller regions. It's called Tuva, Altai, Amur, and Buratian. And these are the 4 southern parts of Asian Russia. And so we are in 8 regions, and that's together with the 20 in European Russia, it's 28. Well, I understand you will say what I want to explain with that and what's the reference to Europe, and it's a bit complicated, but it makes a lot of sense, because with 28 regions, that's about reasonable for a country of 145 million. And by the way, Crimea will never be Russian. And that will join Ukraine back again. And it's legally in Ukraine. So 28. So we have exactly this 28 region. And then it makes a lot of sense, because then you can explain and work much better. And what I call now is the European Union and the member states of the European Union to make a direct partnership with each of these regions. So that means Germany to work with old Russia, Finland to work with Komi, Karelia and Norway or Finland to make a partnership and really work not with Moscow, but work with the regional capitals. And also when it comes to Volga, obviously England should engage there. Kuban, Italy, Astrakhan, Kalmykia, Romania, Bulgaria engage. When it comes to Ossetia, Ingushetia, Chechenia, Dagestan, Cherkessia, Alania, I call for the Balkan states and to make a partnership with each of them. And the same is true for Ural, Siberia, Kamchatka, Pacifica, Tuva, Altai, Amur and Buratian. Here to have partners from possible, let's say, the United States, also Canada, to be part of such a partnership, and really significantly now for the next 20 years to work systematically in a partnership between, let's say, Italy and Kuban, between Finland and Komi, and to really make sure an investment and development partnership of the European Union and the Western countries with the Russian Federation on a regional bilateral basis. Not making the Moscow elites richer by corruption, but working directly in the environment, in infrastructure, in getting all these regions up to some standards, yeah? And bring the ideas of real federalism towards Russia. And not support centrifugal, because we have no interest in a Russia falling apart or in a big crisis, border wars, internal civil wars, Yugoslavian kind of style of crises between Astrakhan and Kalmykia about the borders. No, they have borders already, and these are basically the 28 regions we shall work with. Some of the regions and some of the districts have to work together because we cannot work with 100 of them. But mostly that's the logical way to see it, to Northern European states, to Central European states, one Baltic country, and then six in the Balkan or in the Northern Caucasus. And then you have this Benelux, and then you have eight regions in Asian Russia, and to work systematically with them and to make sure they develop better, but not by asking any ministry back in Moscow, but directly working together and circumvent Russian centralism and Putinism and help these regions, not with the intention of any kind of independence movement. That might come alone, and I'm confident the longer Putin holds power, he will be like the a typical sclerotic system. The longer, when he really stays until 2036, we really will have many troubles, because the longer he keeps the lid on the pot, it will be much more difficult later to reform into a free federal Russia. We will have more independence movement and more separatist crises if he will continue until 2036. But nevertheless, already now, it makes a lot of sense to study this kind of 28, and might it be 30 in some case. I don't make the claim that this is the absolute number, but I want to explain that when you see that oblasts are regions, and when you see then some countries have enough identity and historic ethnic identity and clearly defined historic legitimacy also to be a federal subject, some are simply regions, but some are like California and not a county, but they are like a state. And then we should treat them as well like that, and we should work with them, and we should also include them in all the mechanisms of working with European countries and somehow prepare for transition. Because one thing is sure, there will be a different Russia in the future. It will maybe take 20 years. It maybe takes 30 years, I don't know. But in the second half of this century, we will definitely have a free federal Russia. And if we prepare, we have a much better one, and we have much less civil strife and violence and complications, border wars, if we systematically already now work along the lines I have proposed for a free federal Russia. But now, in this moment, I think it's time to freeze Russia and so show, and that's also very important, one more, to show the Russian middle class that we are not the lackeys of Russian autocracy. We are not the complicit group to support Putin. We are not just interested in energy and resources and forget about them. We really care for the Russian people. We want the Russian middle class to be rich, successful, prosperous, free, secure. We want peace with Russia, and we want to make sure that the Russians live also at European level of prosperity. And there is a lot of good human rights people out there who think that this kind of failed, broken transition, this generation which Putin basically has stolen from the Russian middle classes, and from the Russian people in the last 20 years, together with the billions and billions of rubles and dollars which he has stolen. But basically, this lost transition, this opportunity of the 90s, which he has hijacked, claiming to save Russia, but mainly saving himself and stealing the future of so many Russians who had to migrate, who had to leave, who live still in very urgent poverty today. Obviously, it was good for some in Moscow and in Petersburg, but in principle, it was really, when you compare it with the living standards in Poland, the security and prosperity and freedom and rights in Romania, and when you see how relatively poor this country has been in comparison with the Soviet Union, and now we have this situation in much parts of Russia, such kind of adjunct poverty, it's really a disaster. And maybe anyhow the transformation will come much faster. And then we will be again in the situation like in 1990, and we will be surprised. And we will say, oh yes, we didn't know that. It was a crisis in Russia. Nobody prepared us. Yeah. And at least I've written my articles, at least I made this podcast. And if anybody is listening, please, this crisis is absolutely 100% sure coming. And the only one we can blame that we are not prepared is our own blindness and our own reluctance to see ahead, because absolutely it will come. And it's time for free federal. Sorry. It's time for free federal Russia, and please support and the transition and prepare it now. Thanks a lot.